Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you remotely because we're able to interview people nationally, which is super cool. Today we have Vinnie Fisher, Chief Executive Officer at Fully Accountable. Vinnie, how are you doing today?
Great, James. Thanks for having me. I love what you guys are doing and my team's excited about all the stuff. And I love what we talked about earlier, how like the show went bigger. And so we're happy to be here with part of your community and share our stories of how we got here.
Yeah, we jumped on the name Authentic Business Adventures, and that's just, it's long. There's three huge words that some people can't spell, but here we are. We got to just run with it. So I'm happy to have you on the show. I gotta say, you got some cool books on your back table there.
Yeah, those are two I wrote. One of them is a book, The CEO's Mindset, that I wrote about a 8-figure hosting company we had, and learned that I kind of set out to sell something that I thought was a good thing to sell and realized I needed to build a big company. And so that kind of was a journey of me breaking that business and what I would do if I was going to build another one. Yeah. And then the other book next to it is called False Prophets, where I woke up and realized that I didn't have any connection to my finances and I was a gross revenue guy. And then one day realized that it's about what I keep and bring into the bottom, not what comes in at the top. And so,
right. That's funny. I used to work for a guy that would get so excited about making a big sale. This is back in the computer repair days and all that jazz. And he'd sell just thousands of dollars of memory back when memory cost thousands of dollars. Right. And he'd be like, yeah, super awesome. And I saw an invoice, or bill of lading really, that showed what he paid for it and then what he sold it for. And I'm like, I don't even know if you made 2% on this.
Exactly.
And we had to ride it out for net 30, net 60, something like that.
Yeah, and so that web hosting company I owned, it was a large web hosting company, and it was exactly that. Lots of people on the team, and I had these false assumptions that we were, web hosting, especially shared hosting, thin margins, but you have customers for a long time. So you make up for it in length of customers. A lot of these faulty assumptions that we were profiting about 5% when we were losing money at 5%.
And
so much flow of cash coming in and these longer contracts, I basically almost bankrupted us with some really faulty assumptions. Same thing, just focused on gross revenue, never really had a mindset around focused on net revenue.
Sure, so there's money coming in and money going out, but when you look at the bank statement on any given day, it looks like you're rich. And then you realize.
Yeah, and then when we got to the end of a month or a quarter, we'd be like, we brought all this money in, where is it? And we'd have this deficit to the bottom line. And we always felt like this leaky bucket. We could never get a good answer to it, except for we just weren't paying attention to the leaky bucket. And that business cycled out because I broke it.
Nice. That's fair. It's interesting that you take responsibility for that completely.
Yep.
So that is admirable. That is rare. That people, I always say, you got to look at the top to figure out who's at fault, right, for anything.
That's right. I built it, I broke it, and I went on from it. And that was a great business that literally, we had even had a chance to sell it in the middle of where it was running decent. Mm-hmm. And in my arrogance, I'm like, no, we're doubling down. And we're doubled down on some of my decisions that were blinded decisions. And ultimately, we broke a company that at one point was the 7th largest shared hosting company on the planet. And so, I'm thankful. Without some of those experiences, I wouldn't be the leader and have the organizations we have today. But, it was a very expensive PhD, and I'll accept that. But with great humility, I would say that was really at my feet. It was, it trickled down from the decisions that I would have made in my late 30s and early 40s, to be honest.
Sure. When did you start that business?
So we started it in my mind in late 2009, but we launched it to the world about the middle of 2010. And it's really had massive growth at the end of 11, into 12, into early 13. It was about the end of 12 and 13 where we started having, the biggest issue was my board, including me, who was the majority control of it, we decided to bring a professional CEO, meaning we handed the ball off from me to somebody else. And one of the biggest problems we didn't either appreciate or realize was how many levers I was really pulling. And in my arrogance, I thought maybe I wasn't pulling as many as I was, or maybe I didn't really understand that. And so when I stepped away from it, almost immediately, we started to have a massive decline in almost every area of the company. And we had almost 500 people on payroll at that point. And by the time I stepped back in and assumed, like, recognized control of it, we went from about $4 million a month in revenue to a little over about $1.8 million. And we were nosediving into debt. And we were able to pull the plane nose back up just enough to kind of soft crash land and sell it off for parts.
Wow. So you built that thing up to 500 employees in a couple of years?
Yeah. So it was late 2010. We did about 1 month. We did a little over 280,000 revenue. We were building websites, like the builder Wix version stuff, before anybody was doing that, you know? Wow. And we had to, because nothing existed tech wise. Mm-hmm. So we just by nature had to build these flat 5-page sites. So we were building the web builder version that you now just kind of click and get as part of your GoDaddy sign up. Well, all the tech that didn't exist, we kind of created back then. And well, once our offer kicked into gear where we could build that as part of your shared service, we went from 280,000, the next month did almost 3 million in revenue. We had this massive explosion. We were thousands of websites behind in building. We were hiring by like 20 people at a time type stuff. It was that kind of craziness. And like, we were like, where do you grab onto a rocket?
The tail?
I don't know. Anywhere you can, right?
Yeah.
I'd walk into the building and we'd have 10 new stations built for customer service. And it was that kind of thing, right? Wow. And so all during 11 and in through 12 for 2 years, we were just humming. And we were so excited about how we were humming. You're that kind of youthful teenager that thinks they can do everything. Mm-hmm. So we started like, what are the other businesses we can do? And we got distracted. And during that distraction is when we really, instead of doubling down on what we had in front of us and become like world-class in our systems and fix the stuff we had to go really fast on, we let our distraction take us into other businesses, meaning things that looked kind of complementary to it. And we never really fixed the core that we sped through. And that's ultimately what led to our demise.
Oh, no. So are you having to just plug in server after server to jump with that much in web hosting?
Oh yeah. So the concept of what we all call a cloud now just didn't exist.
Right.
We built our version of that, a cloud. So we just took, you know, things that we take for granted now. Like, I'm not a programmer, but I intellectually had to like catch up to these things. You know, the idea where now you hook into server and cloud is basically servers helping servers manage load. Mm-hmm. Back then, what you did is just provision or build up another server, and you'd have one run as like your master and dump all your load to the other servers. Well, now you can separate the front from the back, and that naturally happens in a cloud environment. Well, we just made up our own. And I remember talking to my friend of another hosting company at one of these big events and said, it would be really neat if we could separate those two things. He's like, we can totally do that. And we kind of baked up in our head how to separate running the data of running up a, spinning up the power on the front versus the power on the back. Gosh, we did that in the middle of 2010 into 11 before it kind of existed. And so we just had to. Necessity bore that out. And we basically built up our own round robining system, which worked as kind of a first version cloud.
That is so cool. It wasn't like you could just fire up Amazon S3 and just, we need more.
No, that didn't exist. You know, we would, back then, like our redundancy was with a service called Rackspace, where we'd use
Rackspace.
Yeah, but back then they were either self or managed, and we just bought load from them, and then we would buy server space within our own rack server farm, where we would just buy another rack, and we would kind of manage that rack versus another rack, and when a server broke, we'd plug another one in. Now, you could just share load over the cloud. You wouldn't even have to build out that infrastructure to run what we did.
Yeah, it's just a side tangent. I wonder what's going to happen with the IT guys of the future that used to fix all this stuff company by company by company. Now that a lot of stuff is moving cloud, you really don't have, a lot of smaller companies really don't have IT infrastructure like they used to.
Yeah, I actually think that, like, if you look at what landscape's happening today, and we live in direct to consumer, and how the behavior of buying has really accelerated kind of like digital and internet activities. I was just looking at a article on LinkedIn about a survey that was done among kind of like 800 big professionals who run their companies. And the number one thing that they spent money on over the, in the last 190 days was the acceleration of digital. 67% of companies have accelerated their digital budget, meaning automation, how to digitize things, how to add artificial intelligence and automation to their companies. Oh. Well, that would not have been able or possible if you go back even a season. And I look at season in like 5 years, mm-hmm. because the tech wasn't here. But the tech is here now to do those things. So what is going to pick up as some benefits for companies is going to also lead to the things we need to automate to even retrain or train some workforce to support that type of business structure we're going to have. So you go back 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been able to support that automation. The tech wasn't here. You couldn't even plug into bank accounts and get like real-time pulls off your data. Mm-hmm. Now you can do all that, but the workforce to support that was untrained to even support that. So I think this next cycle, which probably was going to happen 3, 4, 5 years from now, is being forced to be now.
That's cool. I was going to ask you, with this hosting company, were you pulling people out of Akron, Ohio?
So, you know, tech-wise, so we've used for granted things like full stack developer. And what a full stack developer is, somebody who basically knows enough code of all the things that play nice with each other. Like they know WordPress, they understand open architecture, they can plug this code with that code. And we just take for granted that now. Well, back then, as I'm aging myself 10 years ago, you had to be good at something like PHP, which was the primary coding for websites.
Right.
Okay. And you would want a coder to do that. Well, we would just hire a kid out of school or somebody who had some website experience building in PHP. And he or she, mostly he back then, would build, and probably now true, he's, would build in that code, and we would support that. Now we want someone to be generally good at like WordPress, generally good at certain design features where they can have front and back end experience, and have the ability to plug into other parts. And the code element pull is way different. So then, yeah, it didn't exist. So we'd hire someone and train them. Now, with global workforce, our whole model for as a company is really premised off the go hire an expert wherever they are. And you should have a global attitude to your workforce and not just compromise having something local just because you wanted someone in your office.
Sure. That is cool. Man, you guys had to be just running by the seat of your pants that whole time. That's crazy.
You know, it's kind of like when you hear those stories of how internet companies go, like we lived it. Like you were like, that's my joke has always been, where do you grab a rocket? Anywhere you can. Every day was this entirely different challenge. And I think that's what's exciting about some of the entrepreneurial journey is, like, Phil Knight wrote this book, Shoe Dog. And in there, he talked about the rocket growth of Nike. And he was like, every day he woke up with this dream that someday the business would be like kind of run without problems. And the problem he had with that deficit is a growing business always has a new problem.
Absolutely.
So one day he got really comfortable, and he wrote about this, where his job was to wake up and solve a new problem. And that hit me really big. I'm like, wait a minute, growing companies just have new problems. Mm-hmm. And so as the leaders of these businesses, we need to embrace that our job is to wake up and solve the new problem that was created by a growing business, and not dream about something untrue, like we're going to someday have a business without problems. That just doesn't happen.
No.
And so once that clicked in for me, the journey of running a business became way more joyful and actually fun, that I'm the one, as the one who, my job's to look ahead a little bit and not be discouraged leading the team through our new problem we have today.
I always tell our employees, man, I'm like, we are like vanilla ice. If you got a problem, you will solve it, right? Because there's no such thing. Yeah, no such thing as a moment, even as a person, that you'll never have a problem because you'll end up creating one.
Yeah, I mean, I had to get comfortable with like learning that anxiety is a thing. You don't eliminate it. You deal with it. Mm-hmm. And boredom is also one of those things. It's not something, it exists. And so back in the day when we were growing, our business started to really work at a level where it got a little boring and we were making money. Instead of going in and treating the parts of the business that need to be fixed as a new opportunity, I got bored and wanted to go create new businesses. And that was a massively immature answer to how to fix a business. And so I've learned over time that boredom is just an indicator. It's actually an indicator of a good business. And what I need to do with that is to slow down, allow margin to exist. And usually my response shouldn't be go create a new distraction. It's fix what's in front of us.
That is so fair. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs will feel the same way or understand that that's a thing.
It's a thing.
Because there's always another idea for like, oh my gosh, we got to start this. And that can pull you away from, I'm completely guilty of this, that can pull you away from the things that you should focus on.
When we launched the parent that I run now, Fully Accountable, when we launched it, I had 7 sister companies that were our first clients.
Wow.
Now, I have a portfolio of companies. We own 3 other operating businesses besides this one. I'm good with that. The mistake I made before was I, in a lot of ways, was a lever puller in those other companies. Mm-hmm. Now, they're just investments. At best, I'm like a chairman of the board. I don't actually believe you should be having overlap of your executive teams running companies. Mm. And I've learned from that. But if you look back at the early days, I had to be honest with you that we had these multiple business operations that kind of birthed out of my distraction attitude.
Sure. I totally understand that. Totally. That is probably one of the hardest things of being an entrepreneur is just reeling that in.
Yeah.
Because you want to, it's just chasing that next thing, right? It's the honeymoon phase of a business.
I actually think it's back to this idea of anxiety and boredom. And when I was really anxious about something, one of the ways that you can deal with anxiety is to avoid it. And so would be like, go watch a movie or play a video game or like go and eat some food or do whatever you can to drift away from it, like avoid it. Well, one of those ways was the distraction as an entrepreneur, because you know, I love and see ideas. I just go create something. Well, that same thing was true when the business was working and it didn't need me. I dream up the dribbles of income, as Andrew Carnegie would call it. And I'm like, well, let's go do that. And next thing you know, we have 4 of those. And it was created out of this theory of distraction, not really driving deeper what was in front of us.
Interesting. That's mature to notice that, to become aware of that.
Well, it took a few bucks losing it in the category. It took some honest self-improvement. It took some self-internalization. Like, I'm convinced that a house that isn't built on a firm foundation will fall. And absolutely, if I'm the firm foundation of our business and a small company's heartbeat run around the leaders who create them and grow them, well, now I had to take an honest assessment and look at that, how while I may have been its greatest catalyst, I also was its greatest problem when I did those things like diversify and distract us.
Sure. Interesting. So tell me, at what point did you write the books in relation to the hosting company and now Fully Accountable?
Yeah, so great, right? So like I have 3 books, actually. The first one's called The Best Investment, A Better You. I have it around in my library in the other room or something, but that story was real interesting. Like I was in the shower one day and I'm like, oh, that's the name of the book. And it bled out of me. And it was the story about me kind of finding my own self-worth again after breaking our business. Mm. Like, was I a one-hit wonder? Did I actually break the greatest thing I was ever going to make? Did I kind of lose some understanding of how I was fearfully and wonderfully made? Kind of just bled out of me. And it was almost like a journey into like self-forgiveness, like rediscovering kind of stuff about me. Help me get my mojo back. That really was a big deal. That happened in, so I wrote those three books, one each year in a 3-year row. I wrote one in 15, 16, and 17 were the three books.
Wow. So
the 15 was like in the fall of 15, 16, I really like started to be excited about writing a book. I'm like, wait a minute. I know I can help a lot of people in the growing of their business if I really honestly show under the hood what happened to us. So CEO's mindset became like a kind of like tell all, here's what I would do. And based on what I did do, don't do this, do some of these things. Also, this is what worked for us. So CEO's mindset, that title is the first chapter of the book. And if I tell anybody, and by the way, before I get any farther, we created a gift page for your community.
Oh.
fullyaccountable.com/authenticbusinessadventures. All someone has to do is go there and we will give you our books for free and other materials. We are so passionate about people in business that we have tools there for you, for your business. No strings attached. It's all yours. So awesome. What I did in that book was I laid out the key part of a business is the CEO or the leader is kind of getting the right mindset, switching from like being a marketer or a product developer into realizing you have a business to grow. Mm-hmm. And when you get out of that 6-figure phase and into a 7-figure phase, it's more important about fixing the business and growing it with people and process than it is about kind of the lighting it on fire thing to get it to a point where you got to fix it. And so that book is all about looking at the maturity that you need to build around you and your business. And then the next book was a self-honest review of what led to the growth of a back office and me waking up in my health company, which was after our web hosting company. And so after we broke our web hosting company, and I sold it for parts. I always wanted to get in the health space. I was passionate about a healthy lifestyle and using supplementation instead of just medicine as a way to kind of improve some of our food basis. So I was excited. We launched a health company. We came out of nowhere, had a really good couple offers with a face cream for women. It was called Consumer's Choice. We popped fast. And it was in the middle of us growing that business that I once again realized that I was focused on the top line, not the bottom line. The really good news about that story was while we were profiting at about 8%, I realized through this process after kind of waking up one day, very juvenile. I know this sounds basic, but I woke up one morning and I'm like, wait a minute. It's not about what I bring in for the company. It's what we keep. Because we'd have these months where we would bring in a lot of revenue. We were doing about $40 million in revenue in this company. We'd have generally lean team.
That's a lot of face cream.
Yeah, we were killing it, man. It was a product called Pirabella, and we were the darling. Like it was selling on shelves. It was selling direct to consumer. The offer was converting. It was a good product. And we actually had some other products, but that was our horse. That was the one that was coming out of the gates. We had razor thin margins in relation to what we were doing. And so when we were growing and putting every dollar into acquiring a customer, I woke up and realized that a company, the way we built it, should have been profiting at about 20%, not at 8%. So next thing you know, I'm like, wait a minute, we're losing 12% a month. We're not making 8, we're like losing. And all of a sudden, everything changed for me where we actually dialed back almost half of our revenue, made ourselves half of our size, fixed our traffic channels where we were overpaying for customers we shouldn't otherwise had, and then grew it back in size and successfully sold that company. But that book, False Profits, is the journey of us figuring out how to acquire a customer profitably and not blow it all just to be so fancy of a big company without any profit margin.
Interesting. I would think that's super common. I always think, I guess it's interesting talking to you because I always think back to the website or the .com boom.
Yeah.
The 2000s and the Super Bowl commercials of like pets.com and stuff like that. Were people throwing money hand over fist at some of these companies that they didn't even have a revenue model.
Well, I still see that now
with investors.
I think right now, like, by the way, that's how all of us as in direct to consumer, like selling off of a website It's how we've been trained. Do everything you can to acquire the customer, disrupt, sell as many, be a brand. That's kind of what the flow for at least two or three seasons. And we look at seasons as 5 years, mm-hmm. for 10, 15, almost 20 years. That's how everyone's been acting. Well, I will tell you, I believe that we're going to see a proper disruption of direct to consumer, where if you don't have profit margin and you don't have cash and you can't survive in the, I think the next correction in direct to consumer is going to be about a profitable relationship to acquiring the customer. You know, almost what we have seen, because we now have a lot of companies we work with, that 42 cents of every dollar is spent acquiring the customer. And
wow,
it's a lot, right? And in our book, we've kind of shown that depending on what type of direct-to-consumer company you are, if you spend over 40 cents on the dollar, you're probably not profitable.
No.
Because you're spending money to acquire, in a lot of cases, reacquire your own customer by re-emailing them, sending them coupons, re-engaging them. Well, if the marketplace of leaders in e-commerce, if we don't actually take advantage of the efficiencies in the global market we have and a way to effectively stop parts of our leaky bucket, we're going to get passed up by the companies that are doing that. Mm. And so what used to be brand disruption, now brand survival and brand kind of expansion, the cash and the ability to withstand disruptions. If you don't have funding coming from the outside and you can't sufficiently capitalize your own growth, I think you're going to grow yourself out of business. And I think you're going to see a collapsing of, because right now, what's really stopping for somebody from coming in to e-commerce and direct to consumer? Not much. The good news about technology is allowing people in, but the inefficiency of the market is going to get corrected by people not having enough cash or capital to withstand the growing pains. And I think direct to consumer is due to have that next. Well, we experienced that 6 years ago, and we've been screaming that. And now overnight, because of this correction to our community of like this outside force of closing everything, I think it's being thrust upon us now, more now than ever.
That's fair. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So do you feel like the cost, the acquisition cost for a lot of customers will have to go down, or people will just have to watch it tighter and make sure they're not just throwing money at the wall and hoping some of it sticks kind of thing?
One of the things we see with clients, as well as with our own companies that we caused problem with, I'll use the word like fear of missing out, FOMO, and channel envy. So one of the problems we see with e-commerce companies and direct to consumer is you're spread too thin with your spend across too many channels. So you're on Facebook, you're on YouTube, you're on TikTok, you're on Google. When reality, you should be on one or two channels, driving them deeper. You spread your cost across too many channels, and your average cost to acquire the customer goes up because you've spread your budget too thin.
Sure.
People are trying to be too broad as opposed to narrow down and go after a very specific audience where they can preserve more of their budget. I believe that's the bigger problem than it is about any other part of how they're spending their marketing budget.
That's fair. Yeah. You're essentially misting a crowd instead of drowning the few people that would actually be your ideal customer.
Yeah. And we have this thing in our head that somehow like we want to be available to a more mass market, but you hear cliche terms that are real, like the niches cause the riches and dial into your audience and all these things. Well, we proved by math and my own journey in business that that really is a very true reality. And when we think about our own company, we are as big as we are because we dialed in and focused on a specific audience. And it allows us to be more efficient with our marketing spend. It allows us to be more efficient with knowing exactly the audience we're talking to. Well, I think that brands that really want to go and grow beyond their own shadow are going to have to address this issue, or they're going to get passed by the ones who do.
Interesting. Man, that's marketing is so important. That's interesting.
You know, we a lot of businesses rely on like reputation, character, kind of that organic guerrilla grassroots stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, this idea of automation, global access, productization, you still have to pay to acquire the customer.
Oh, all the time.
The old adage, whoever can spend the most to acquire the customer ultimately wins. Well, there's a point where that ends. If you don't have the money to live with the growing of dealing with process improvement and adding people to your team, you're going to run out of runway with your cash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the acquisition cost of a customer, you got to keep a sharp eye on that. I work with a guy that is in the construction industry, and he's trying to help contractors get business, essentially. And right now in the world that we're in, they don't really need a ton of help.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's asking them, what is your acquisition cost? Because he's comparing an Angie's List or a Home Advisor or something like that to what he can do. And he can do more and essentially less because it's better leads and all this kind of stuff. But anyways, the contractors don't know. They have no idea how much they're spending per actual signed contract. No idea.
Yeah. And they have no idea, even if, like, you know, it's funny, Google AdWords, right? When someone's looking for you, it's like a search component. You can spend traditionally more money to see those eyeballs because that person's already kind of looking for you.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to where you might be in Facebook where you're just kind of guessing and you're not sure if they're looking for you. You're hoping that they stumble on you. Mm-hmm. It might be massively expensive to have a set of eyeballs that are unqualified eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
When that contractor says, yeah, I want to have eyeballs look at me. We're like, okay, would you spend $200, $300, $400, $500 to have that customer look at you? And they go, we have no idea. We just want to lead. Mm-hmm. It is exactly the issue I'm talking about when someone really needs to dial in their acquisition costs, because actually 80% of companies will go out of business for lack of cash flow. You know,
oh, absolutely.
We don't realize that we're statistically flat on the amount of businesses that are closing right now in this calendar year, like we were last year. The different sectors, but we're statistically flat. You would think
it's flat.
Statistically flat. You would think in what's going on, we'd have more. Mm-hmm. Well, some businesses have thrived over this.
Oh yeah.
And the ones that were going to close probably got accelerated in their closure because they didn't have the cash to withstand the hit.
Yeah.
Well, we're statistically flat on closure. So you say to yourself, what does that really mean? Well, it's back to the general business principles. Maybe the way the consumer's responding is just a different medium, but more important than ever, everyone else now can also pay for their attention. So you better start dialing that in.
Yeah. There's an incredible amount of competition from a marketing standpoint. I have an online window company and we're looking at, like you mentioned, Google AdWords. Some of those phrases or terms are $40-some a click.
Right.
$40 a click?
Hey, we live in accounting and finance. You know how expensive it is to have an eyeball or get a conversion? Like, I mean, maybe the lawyers have it worse, the asbestos lawyers or whoever, but right. At night, like, it's an expensive click. But in search, if they're looking for you and they make that click and you can find a way to convert them, you'll certainly pay more for that click than you might on YouTube or Facebook. Because it's a qualified click.
Yes. It's theoretically yes. They should be searching for something like that. And there's only one reason they're searching for that, right?
They're not looking for contracting services or accounting because they want to order pizza.
Yeah, right. They're just really bored, want to know.
Yeah. I don't think anyone ever wakes up and goes, how do I look for a fractional CFO? There's no sense of that ever happening.
So tell me, the Fully Accountable, how long has that been going on?
So we opened that in that kind of August timeframe of 2014, but we opened it internally. We had a big team that was doing accounts receivable and payable for our health company. And nobody could tell me the cost to acquire my customer. My own company. Oh. And we were built with this old traditional mindset, like 2 months from now, we'll close the books and like the old way of doing business. And tech hadn't really caught up yet. And I was like, that's it. I need to know what it costs to acquire the customer. And so with someone in my customer service department, not even in my accounting department, we set out to kind of with Excel, solve our own problem. And that's when I found out that almost half of my affiliate traffic, I was spending too much money to acquire the customer. I literally went back to the grassroots way of figuring that out. And then what we did is started introducing our own tech, connecting to bank accounts, tying software back to the real math that was in your bank account. And once we got better at that manually, we launched to the world in February of 15 at one of those big tech conferences. And we've been taking outside customers ever since. Now we look like this overnight success because of what's happened to the world. But back then, everyone thought we were out of our minds that Vinny, this crazy good marketer, is going to open a super boring accounting company. Well, now, with the way global work's doing, everyone's like, wow, we really need that today. Well, you fast back 24 months ago, and people were still wanting someone in their office. They were still wanting to do old traditional way. But now with budgets tightening up and the need for immediate access to information, we're having record growth hours, days, and months that we should be having. And everyone's like, wow, where'd you come up with that idea? Well, that started back in 2014. And now we have this system and 75 people and a software we built. But good night. I tell you that story in 2015, and I probably put James to sleep with that story.
I don't know if he would. That's a cool story. Because we're with Calls on Call, the call answering service that I have.
Yep.
We're having a similar growth where people before are like remote office admin, receptionist, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
This is a small company. And then everybody had to have.
James, our number one objection was the one you had. It was like when someone would review fractional CFO or controller, full back office, the number one objection was always, oh, I'd really love to have that person in my office.
Mm-hmm.
That's gone now.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist an objection for very obvious reasons, right? One, lots of people don't have offices right now.
Right.
And so what that's exposed is what we say are time, money, and resources, which is part of like our motto. Mm-hmm. Win back your own time. Take the money you have and spend it where you can limit it and get the best bang for your buck and go where someone has way more resources than you and experts. So I would tell you fractional outsourced work in Back to CEO's Mindset, my book, there's like six real departments of a company. Other than like the heartbeat of like the COO and the CEO and the kind of the little founder group, you can outsource major chunks of your company.
Oh, huge.
Be a way more efficient and profitable company than you ever could be because technology and global access has caught up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting just from a competition point of view, how fast a competitor can get in the market that you've been working on for 3, 4, 5 years or more because the technology is moving so fast.
Yeah. And we love it. Like we only, you know, we serve hundreds of companies. We're the biggest in what our space is. Mm-hmm. And someday when we serve 1,000 companies, we're going to be gigantic. Like we want more like professionals doing this work. Like the only competition we have is what's in our head. There's so many people to serve. There's so much an underserved, the reason our phone's ringing so much, the reason why your phone's ringing so much is you're meeting a need that, and you are on the other side of this like disruption. I say with great humility, we didn't do anything right. We just didn't do anything wrong either. Like there was a line drawn in the sand. I can imagine if the governor of Ohio got on 190 days ago and said, there's this virus and it's on your computer, don't log in. Well, let me tell you something. We'd be in a lot of trouble.
Right.
Like you go back X amount of days, people are like, someday there's going to be this internet blackout, local's better. Who would have ever thought the opposite of that is true?
Right.
Well, the global world's kicked in. And I think that tech deployment, I think this need to reintroduce or for the first time introduce training that allows for some type of efficient support of automation is the real next phase of business. Whether you're local, retail, or online, we have this new version of business. We have a new season that everyone is getting used to. We just happen to be on the front edge of it. And who would have thought an outsourced accounting company would be on the front of that, right? Like you would have laughed us off the show 2 years right. ago. I'm serious. Like,
well, yeah, in December, now, right?
Yeah,
December last December, year.
You're exactly right. And so we're like an internet company that happens to get ROI on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting as far as through all this who the winners have been and who the we'll call losers, not in a disrespectful way, but I got friends that own retail stores that are like, what just happened? And I feel
their
bad
margins were thin at the start and now their foot traffic is down
way down
and so you're right, like By the way, though, in fairness, you know, businesses, 94% of companies never see their 10th year in business.
Mm-hmm.
So 12 years ago was when we had this massive correction. There were winners and losers in that correction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of that was real estate, overvaluation, borrowing of money, but there was a massive sector of correction in mm-hmm. how business was operated. Well, we're going through another one of those.
We are.
We're going through another one of those. And there's going to be a real big correction. And taking the drama out of it or any type of underlying feelings, there is absolutely people on either side of that line that was drawn. And you're either going to have to improve upon what you have or completely change what you do in right. order to exist in what's going to be this next season of how we do business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough. It's a bitter pill to swallow for a lot of people. I feel so bad. I was talking with one of my friends that's got a retail store where they also had riots and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's no shame in just closing up shop for what you got going on. It's just the rent is expensive based on having foot traffic. There's no foot traffic, at least none that is interested in purchasing from you, right? So it's a tough nut.
What'll happen in the way a free market works, regardless of your feeling about anyone's feeling about a free market, and we're going to have some version of a free market society until we don't. But mm-hmm. while we have one, what if statistically the amount of businesses closing are about statistically the same, what's also true are the new businesses opening.
Right.
And so in a free market, the inefficiency of lack of cash gets corrected by a market. So the amount of new people opening up a restaurant or a retail store, or you fill in the blank, you're going to watch that wave of people come in and kind of, will we have the exact amount of those opened? Probably not. But will we have an efficient or a way to address what was closed? Yeah, we're going to have a new improvement to some of those categories in the way we do it. Like the market is going to demand that. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, my neighbor says to me, you know what's really cool? You can like buy stuff online and it's shipped to your house in less than 2 days. And I'm like, buddy, we've been doing that for a while.
When did he say this?
But I think that speaks to the mass thinking, not where you and I live, right?
All right.
You and I have been living in a digital environment. We kind of take for granted some of that. Mm-hmm. I think when you look at like Jack Dorsey from Twitter comes out and says, wow, we've accelerated 4 years of behavior and buying behavior online. We're like seeing e-commerce activity that we were predicting we were going to see in 2024. Well, that speaks to the habit of how people bought things, where they would just drive over to the store and get it. Well, since they didn't feel at least at a minimum comfortable mm-hmm. to do it, or at some requirement, they weren't allowed to do it. The supply chain was filled by people going online and doing it. Mm-hmm. And so what you were like afraid before of entering your credit card is now becoming normal. And so when my neighbor says, yeah, that's the way we did it on the interwebs. Well, he was one of those guys that just drove over to fill in the blank retail store to buy his stuff. And now he's like, well, ain't that hard to just hit the button and have it come to my house. Whoa. Well, if we were only having, let's say, a 15% adoption rate, the internet was still seen as weird and mavericky.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to add that 10% plus that's been added to that, and when this is all said and done, the kind of guessing pundits out there will say 25-35% of the buying behavior will be online. We are becoming more and more mainstream, which is why the neighbor, while he may have sounded weird, is gonna make sense, because we've adopted a new way to buy stuff.
Sure. Interesting. Man, I always think of my neighbor. Anytime he sees a mail truck or FedEx, he's like, oh, Amazon's here.
Just yeah.
Universally. That's been going on for years. He's been complaining about his wife.
Yeah. I might be the wife who does that. Like I literally don't like going to the store. I've been buying off Amazon for so long. I feel like Jeff should name his kid after me, but that's up to him. So.
Right. He's could probably have some extras just in case.
That's right.
Oh, that's funny. So how has business been going for you, I guess, pre-pandemic and now post-pandemic? How have you dealt with the growth?
You know, one of the things, and it's, first off, growth has been amazing. I'm so thankful that I think this is true. I think businesses that were primed to actually take advantage of a growth curve in this time are the businesses that were best positioned and had the cash to grow properly through it. We had both of those. We were positioned right, not by our own doing, just by the way this played out. We were positioned right, and we were cash heavy, ready to go for this. So we've been able to invest in team, take advantage of sales and marketing addition, not subtraction. We hadn't had to tighten the budget. What's interesting is I think we were able to improve on doubling down what we were doing, not change or pivot into something new and have to guess. We were able to just improve. And I think that speaks to why we were able to grow. But one thing that I would love to encourage everyone listening that we did that I would really love everyone to do when you have to take an honest assessment of what you have in front of you. I asked our COO, actually with three COOs, I asked each of them of their respective businesses to go back and look at our team and measure them by your team members that went above and beyond the call of duty, the ones that met the obligation of what they have to do, and the ones that fell below the line of the basic command of like the quid pro quo of an employer-employee relationship. We call them team members, but, and anyone who fell below that line, we immediately asked them to leave the team. Wow. Because we were cleaning up the way we do things, right? So you have a couple of ways you can react to this cup of corrections. And so what we need to do is to improve how we were as companies. Mm-hmm. And when we removed the people below the line, actually the ones who were at the line or even went above filled in as we added the new people to our team that needed to be there. And we've had a massive uptick in culture, a massive uptick in client satisfaction through surveys and scores.
Nice. And
absolutely. It's been huge for us. And I, the only thing I would say of learning from that lesson, we should go through that habit more often. Because back in an abundant phase, 2018, 2019, let's be honest, the market was thin for people to come on your team because everyone and their brother was hiring them.
Oh, well, my gosh. Yeah, fired an employee in December, November last year.
Holy cow. This idea of having an A player got a little bit tired of hearing because you're like, you just take any B.
Or yeah,
B
can you fog in the ear? Yeah.
Right? But now we're kind of back to some of that talk, like making sure you have the right people on the team is probably more important now than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was joking with someone. Or I was joking with a group, a networking group of mine. And it's funny. I'm like, I don't want to make this political, but I feel like we need to open up the border because I feel like the people that traveled 2,000 miles on foot to the border would show up for an interview. Where the people that are like within your city won't show up for an interview.
In this world, James, I think now that we've been required to stay home and figure out remote work, I think leaders realize that while we all agree that networking, human relationship, some creativity is very hard to duplicate remote-wise, yet you can get work done and experts live in other places, that what's been shown to us is that you can go hire people who live other places and excel as a company. You can go out and hire a relationship. It doesn't have to be in your backyard, and it might be a better move for your company. I don't think businesses would have seen that if it wasn't required on them.
Totally agree. Oh, 1,000 times. With calls on call especially, I can tell you that. I was afraid to let anybody out of the office because I'm like, we can have redundancy. We can have oversight. It's way easier to manage when people are under one roof. If somebody shows up, you know it. If they don't show up, you know it. We're remotely, I hope they showed up.
Yeah.
But I had my first, an hour ago, I had my first interview via Zoom with multiple candidates that were all in different locations throughout the country.
That's exciting.
And that would have never happened before.
Yeah, so people think like we're so massively ahead of the curve, but you know, we have a corporate office, we have a hybrid model. Okay. We have homies, people who work from home. We just call them homies. That's our cultural name that we call them.
Sure.
We've been doing that since 2015. Now, so when this all happened, people are like, oh my gosh, what are you gonna do about people going home? We're like, okay, our corporate people are going to have to learn how to work off the kitchen table because they're not used to being at home. But the reality of us doing interviews off Zoom or like having remote interviews, like this is the way it's going to go now. And for us as a company, we just double clicked on what's been working well for us. So we just have more homies on the team. And so, you know, it's, and I love it that businesses like yours and many other of my friends who sit like you and I are realizing they don't have to have someone in the office next to them to absolutely really excel as a company. And right. to me, I think that's an improvement to business. I actually think that's allowing us to add the best people to the team, not someone who just happens to live in either like Madison or Cleveland.
Right. Oh my gosh. It just opened up the doors for the volume of applicants that you can get. And just, I mean, it's easier for us to cover a schedule because of the different time zones and stuff like that. It just opens up so many logistics that the limiting one is how do we get a computer to this new hire?
And you, it's like, how do you have the headset with the dialer all work in a closed system? And so we've built our own closed system that we've been improving on over these last few years. Now, some companies had to wake up and do that overnight. Now that is tough, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to figure it out. And they're doing it. I say to that business leader who's listening, do it manually. Don't overbuild the automation right now because you don't know what you're doing. Just do it as lean as you can and improve as you go.
Mm-hmm. Name of the game. Oh, that's super cool. Vinny, you got to tell me whether, are they records in the back behind you?
Oh yeah. That's this, by the way, James, everything you see is to make my ego feel better. Right?
That's all right. I'm the same way. Right.
So
I'm same way.
The over my shoulder, these records, there's a software we use, ClickFunnels, and we drive leads and marketing. And I, and one of my talents is people would say, I believe I'm a pretty decent marketer. Well, those are awards I've won for being able to drive at least $1 million in revenue through a funnel. And then these awards over here are because the last 2 years we've been awarded as one of the fastest 5,000 growing companies in the United States.
Very cool. Very cool. So what do you see for the future of Fully Accountable?
Our fractional CFO and controller service is exploding. And for us, what we set out to build before was this back office completely done human part where we added tools to it. And now I think dashboard automation, lower dollar stuff has got a problem because people are correcting their budgets and they don't have the extra room to spend on fancy tools. Mm-hmm. So what I see happening, my advice to every service provider is provide something of a little higher value where you do the work is going to differentiate from low dollar dashboardy stuff because the market from a standpoint of being able to buy it isn't going to tolerate an extra piece of a tool because the budgets are tighter. And so I'm excited about where you're providing a service component that is actually providing filling in the blank for a company. I think the business process outsourcing category, the place where you and I live is even though they would have said a couple of years ago, we were due to grow a little bit. The sectors where you and I live are, have they've recast growth figures and we sit to double and triple in size on the backside of this correction.
Very cool. That's impressive. That is impressive. So just for the people, I guess the listeners, what is Fully Accountable?
So Fully Accountable is a full outsourced fractional service that provides fractional CFO and controller services where we run your entire accounting and finance office for e-commerce and tech companies.
All right. E-commerce and tech companies exclusive.
Yep, that's where we live. And my tip to you is, as a service provider, have an audience. You want to know our number one secret weapon to as big of a company as we are, is we talk to that audience. So if that's not your audience doing seven figures and up in revenue, then you don't work with us. Now, we care about you, which is why we created We Care Fully Accountable, and we'll help you. We'll point you in a direction, but you're not going to be our client because we only have to speak one language. We speak digital. We don't speak all the other business languages, and that is actually how we have massively grown, and I encourage that for everybody trying to serve a business. If you only have a few clients or hundreds of 50 clients or whatever, and you want to double in size, don't go after working for millions of companies. Focus in on the ones you do, and I promise you, you'll explode in growth like we have.
Nice. That's super cool. Super cool. Vinny, what was that website again where people can get the books?
Go right to fullyaccountable.com/your show, Authentic Business Adventures. And right there, you know, that'll be in the show notes. We'll provide it for you. You will be able to get our books for free. We care about you as a business, whether you're in e-commerce or digital or not. Please take advantage of those. We want to help you. If you want to figure out how to automate your systems, how to really take advantage of tech today, how to figure out what to outsource, what to not, when to bring on James's call center and all those things, we have those tools for you to help figure that stuff out. Go take advantage of them.
That is super cool. That is super cool. If someone wanted to get a hold of you or your company, what would be the best way to do that?
You can get Vinny Fisher at any of the social footprints, very available. Now, I'll tell you, someone on our team manages most of those, but we'll happily handle you. If you want to just go to We Care Fully Accountable and write us an email, or just go to our website. We are very digital friendly. We have a very decent footprint, and we're here to help you.
Cool, cool. I appreciate it. Well, Vinny, thanks so much for being on the show. Do you have anything that you'd like to add for the listeners?
I'd say this. You didn't do anything wrong if you got massively nailed by this line in the sand.
Totally agree.
I also believe that this has required a new season of life and business that got accelerated to a season we were going to have. And I just want to encourage you, if you're somebody who's living in that middle, go reach out to people like James, myself, some others who are living on the front of this, because you can do it. It's actually not as complicated and it's not as automated as you might think. And we're just going to have a new way. We're going to deploy a little bit of tech into your companies. And that's the new way business is going to be done.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's interesting. I teach this business planning class remotely now. And the students were like, who do I ask for help? And I'm like, you ask anybody that owns a business, they will be more than happy to help you. If Absolutely. They don't, they're a jerk. Forget about them. They'll be bankrupt in a minute. But realistically, entrepreneurs help entrepreneurs because they understand that it's an uphill struggle almost all the time as long as you're in a power growth mindset.
Absolutely. It's a struggle all the time. We're battling big business. We're battling rules that aren't really made for small business. We're battling the attention of the eyeballs of a consumer. We're mm-hmm. battling some of our own awful decisions. We're battling all kinds of things. And so, amen, man. Our whole culture of our company is in the fight because I'm in the fight.
That's true. I love it. I love it. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you remotely, because that's how we do it. It's more fun that way, right? It's the world we live in. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering services to businesses in all stages across the country, on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as drawincustomers.com, offering business coaching services for small businesses, specifically in the service sector, on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Vinny Fisher, Chief Executive Officer at Fully Accountable. So that's fullyaccountable.com, right, Vinny?
That's correct.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me today, James.
Oh my gosh. I could talk to you for hours, but I know you probably got a lot of stuff to do, and I know the radio won't air us much longer than this. So we gotta keep it where it is. So I appreciate you being on the show, Vinny. The website, one more time, was fullyaccountable.com/authentic business adventures. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
Awesome. I appreciate it. That's a huge gift.
Yeah, you're welcome. We're happy to help. We just want to do our part to really look. If we can do statistically help small businesses, which I believe is the heartbeat of our free market economy, then let's help each other actually one more step of improvement, and it'll be a great day.
Super cool. Super cool. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.